Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
We have a lot of emails. I'm going to choose a couple of them at random for the sake of fairness, kind of like the lottery. This one's from Ian. Hi, Gabriel and Connor. First, let me say that I enjoy your program. You recently aired a piece about sleep and sleep apnea, including information on alternatives to CPAP machines. I use one and I hate it. If something else will work, I want it. Can you please send a link to that episode? I've looked at the podcast and can't find it. Thanks, Ian. Ian, yes, I will send that to you. And also any information that I collected as part of my notes for that episode. This was in relation to connected to a TikTok trend, or a trend that went viral on TikTok about putting tape over your mouth so that you breathe through your nostrils at night. The conclusion, based on a kind of a meta study of 10 smaller studies on trying that, is that it's almost entirely ineffective. Some use cases, but almost entirely ineffective. You should not be doing that. Consult a doctor. Ian, I will send that to you.
I got one here. I believe this was probably addressed to me because my pronunciation of su@dw.com is so obscure that people just, I guess, can't understand what I'm saying.
Did you mean to say obscure?
Obscure?
Obscure.
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 Yeah.
Speaking of pronunciation, go on.
Hello. First off, you have a great show. I listen whenever I can. Your emphasis on accentuating the letters made me laugh. A funny story. Many years ago, I stumbled across Science Unscripted on the radio, but I heard F you rather than SU. I thought, what kind of a show is this? So I continued to listen. Oh, he liked it. Okay, yeah. Thanks for all the interesting content and kudos to DW. That was from Brian. Thank you, Brian. That was...
F you. I bet now that I'm thinking about that, there's probably a podcast out there that instead of Science Unscripted, it's like Fun Unscripted or Franconia Unscripted.
United.
Something.
Yeah.
And then they'd be like, yeah, email us F you. And it's provocative and it gets your attention. That's not a bad idea. But yeah. No, that's not what ours means. Ours means Science Unscripted. We have orange Science Unscripted hats. We have too many of them.
Yeah.
Our merchandise team here sent us boxes of hats. If you're ever close to Bonn, Germany, come by. We'll give you 10.
That invitation is on the table for anyone who is anywhere near Germany or Bonn.
Yeah.
Come here.
They're really cheap.
We'll have some lunch. Yeah. Brent almost came here.
Almost. That almost worked out. Yeah, they're really cheap hats. They're nothing special. But we get a lot of questions. What is SU? What does that mean?
Soviet Union.
Soviet Union. Yeah, you can choose all sorts of things. It's also a license plate, a local license plate. Starts with SU. So a lot of different answers to that.
Just kidding. It doesn't mean Soviet Union. Yeah, I got one last email here from Gary. As I listened this morning to your piece on rule followers and rule breakers, I immediately recognized myself as having been mostly a rule follower, at least in the first half of my life. The reason for my inclination to follow the rules in my earlier years definitely related to my need to be accepted by my tribe and peers. However, as I have gotten older and become more of a critical thinker, confident and comfortable in my own skin, though I still mainly adhere to the rules, I do so more mindfully and, on occasion, selectively.
Ooh.
That is such a beautiful way to say that you break a rule now and again, Gary. Such wonderful writing.
Yeah. Euphemistically?
Yeah.
Depends on the rule. I mean, imagine it's like a really... I don't know, some sort of violent act, breaking something for no reason.
All these dependent clauses that you have to get through, so beautifully crafted, the prose all the way to the end, and then selectively.
Very nicely written. This was in connection to our interview last week on why people follow rules when they don't have to, when there's no immediate social consequence for breaking that rule.
No, there's a cost by following the rules.
Yeah.
So why do you follow them?
A negative.
Why wouldn't you break them?
Yeah, a negative incentive. Yeah. And yet people do it anyway. Roughly 70% of people, and this goes across countries internationally, do follow the rules. At one point, I think one of the questions we didn't include with that researcher, Simon was his name, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Simon.
From Vorarlberg down in Austria.
Yeah. I had asked him whether there was a difference in across countries, like in Germany, rule following Germany. And he said, no, this is constant. 70% follow the rules, 30% don't. That appears to be an intrinsic human trait. We're born with that.
Yes. because the study was conducted with U.S. participants in the United States, but he has also done work similar to it in Germany. Same results.
One thing I found interesting, question I was still asking, is whether by moving to a different country, you become more conscious of rule breaking, because those rules are different from the rules you grew up with. He grew up in Austria. Now he lives in England. Some rules will seem a little silly to him, just because they're different. They're not the ones he grew up with. Mm-hmm. And are you more inclined to become selective, as Gary said, or do you still adhere to the rules? Does everyone kind of become more of a rule breaker over the years?
We asked him that very question, whether he does break the rules, and he said, a lot like Gary, there are some where it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So... yeah. If it's not a big, he said, I've never committed a crime. I've never broken the law. But there are some rules here and there that I just, you know, decide or, you know, don't follow.
Jaywalking. We all jaywalk. I jaywalk. That's mine. I'm going to move on to some science, a new paper, and begin with a question for you, Gabe, for all our listeners out there. When I ask you, which animal comes to mind? It's the most abundant animal on planet Earth. Gabe, what is it now?
Fish.
No. I thought you were going to say ants. The insect that jumps out at me is ants, or maybe like a flying bug. The answer is nematodes. Nematodes are, it's not a toad. Get that image. It's a worm.
A worm.
A small, translucent, sort of kind of clearish worm. When I say small, they're anywhere from, if you've got a centimeter, right? A centimeter is roughly your pinky nail. Mm-hmm. If you have fingernails.
I do have them, yeah.
Yeah. Your pinky nail. So one tenth of that fingernail would be roughly the size of a small...
one nematode.
Nematode. Mm-hmm. And up to a quarter of it. Those are the larger nematodes, these clear worms. There are, when I say the most abundant animal on Earth, there are 57 billion nematodes for every person.
Wow.
90% of them live kind of in the uppermost part of the topsoil. They're under our feet every single day. We don't see them. We don't talk about them. We don't think about them. One of them, C. elegans, was genetically sequenced fully in 2019. This is one of the animals that we constantly test things on, drugs on. We talked about a taurine study just recently. That was, I believe, the worm that they tested taurine on. In terms of longevity, these are really important creatures. And what happened here in this study, this is the Max Planck Institute for Biology. No, I'm sorry. This is the Max Planck Institute of Animal Behavior. And they're down in Constance, Germany, beautiful area of Germany, big lake. And what the researchers there did is they went out to some apple orchards and pear orchards where you had these fruits lying on the ground. There are pictures of them. You can see them in the study itself. And they looked at the rotting fruit, and that's where you would find, that's one of the places where you would find these nematodes. And what I immediately thought of is, boy, how many nematodes have I eaten in my life if they're so prevalent in slightly rotting or overripe fresh fruit, right? Like I grab raspberries sometimes. I grab other things sometimes. How many times have I eaten these? Anyway, that's not the point of the study. The point of the study is these animals do have a problem because they're so small. Namely, how do they move around? If they're in a small micro environment and they've used up all the resources there and they need to go somewhere else, let's say you take an apple and I've taken a big bite out of it or something and they want to go from one side of the apple to the other side, how do they get there?
Can they slither?
Right, but possibly.
Or somehow shuffle their way.
That's for such a small animal, that could be a potentially overwhelming distance.
Yeah.
They're not like ticks, for example.
They're stuck at the bottom of a compost pile. How do they get around?
Yeah. And... So one of the things that researchers had witnessed in laboratory settings, but never in the wild, and that's what the study has confirmed, is they can form quote-unquote living towers. And how they decide to do this, or what the biological mechanism or drive or instinct is, I don't know if that's been clarified or will be clarified, but at some point they realize we need to work together and form a tower. And this tower, even though it's made up of lots of individual worms, is like a new animal and reacts and moves like a new animal. And if something touches it, like a human finger, it reacts to that as like a
as one
as one as a new organism. and could potentially, as part of that reaction, latch onto, I'm not sure, a human finger, but fur or something else to then transport this, almost this life raft of worms to a different location.
And once it makes this tower, can it separate again and go back to the way it was before, or is it now the tower?
That's a question I don't believe the researchers answer in this paper. It's, or at the very least, I can say I don't know the answer to
what,
it.
What were they looking at in this paper? What would they do it for?
I'll just quote them. And this is from, what I'm quoting here is taken or is published by the Max Planck Institute. They say, our study opens up a whole new system for exploring how and why animals move together. And I think the why is more interesting there. Why would they? They talked about how when they do this, when they reproduce it in a lab, they take C. elegans, so one of these worms. But these worms are in a laboratory setting so genetically similar that the way that they all act together might be because of that genetic similarity, whereas in the wild, they're going to be genetically different. And does this pose a risk, for example, some freeloaders not really doing their work to create that tower, but then benefiting from it? And by I'll finish up the quote here. By harnessing the genetic tools available, we now have a powerful model to study the ecology and evolution of collective dispersal. Collective dispersal. Again, this tiny, microscopic, translucent, smaller than a grain of rice animal, it's under our feet every day, and somehow, not somehow, it has learned how to move all around our planet, even though it's so small. That's what this paper is about.
There was some news this week out of France following a deadly knife attack by a high school student. And it was the French president on a social media website saying that he was going to ban social media for young people, i.e. people 15 years old and younger. And that is not, that's a desire that's not only French. There's also in Greece, they want to do this. Spain, apparently, they're toying with the idea. Now, Emmanuel Macron, the French president, is saying it. Well, I'm going to ban it.
Well, I was just going to say, I didn't follow up on it, but there's a German, I think, parliamentarian who has floated the same idea. We've talked about this on this show with our colleague, our Australian colleague. Australia has imposed a social media ban for ages 16 and under.
Yeah, that Matthew Ward Aegis, our colleague, filled us in on that. There, as he said in that discussion, I think I remember it was back in November. It's been a while now since that happened, but there's a lot of literature. A lot of studies have been done on the effect of social media on young people's mental health. So many that it's hard to, it's almost like you can read whatever result you want to get. There's been so many studies.
Whatever your opinion is on whether or not
you can confirm it or corroborate it based on the literature that you look at. But the overall, as a general rule, it seems to have a negative effect with regard to depression, anxiety, even disordered eating habits, body dysmorphia. Correlations are there. Like I said, there's been so much work. It's hard to keep an overview of where that's at.
Well, now that you're saying this, the other thing I think we mentioned in that episode talking about Australia is that it will, for a long time here, be correlation association, because one thing that researchers are not allowed to do is to put a bunch of 11-year-olds into a laboratory setting and expose them to really nasty social media content, something that could have a toxic or negative effect on them that goes against the ethics of conducting any study, and so everything is going to be association.
So no matter how many studies have been conducted, they're all cross-sectional. You can't do longitudinal work for the reasons that you just mentioned. So if you hear people talking about how bad social media is and jumping to conclusions, they might be onto something, but not necessarily. So even when you hear the French president saying, I'm going to ban it.
What was his logic? Sorry to interrupt. His logic for, he was suggesting that this knife attack was inspired by social media?
A direct result of social media, of unhealthy social media usage. Therefore, I'm going to ban it. He also said that he's going to ban knife sales. So that it might have been an impulsive reaction, which can absolutely be understood. If you're the president of a country and something like this happens, of course you want to say something. But yeah.
We will be very interested and we'll update you on any information that comes out of Australia after their ban. Mm-hmm. What has that done? Are there any markers for improvements or negative outcomes as a result of that? We don't know yet. That's how new all of this stuff is. We all have our opinions. One question I still have is whether what is functionally a communication app, WhatsApp, very prevalent here in Germany. There's a way to use it so that it becomes like social media, where I can watch people post things but not reply and give them thumbs up. That's like other social media platforms. So how do you categorize these apps? Is that a social media app or is it a communication app? Very, very complicated. Yeah, interesting to watch. Another quick one, coincidentally. I kind of got worried when you said France because I thought, oh no, you looked at the same paper that I did. And you did not. This was a study just out in Nature called, if you want to look it up yourself, Rapid Emergence of a Maths Gender Gap in First Grade, unfortunately behind a paywall. But again, as we've said on the show, if you email any of the, looks like 6-7 researchers involved in this paper and ask for a PDF version, they will probably send it to you. That's one of the tips you learn on the show, as long as you're not using it for commercial purposes, which we are not. Anyhow, what they found there, they're not saying much with this research, which is why I like it. It effectively says that when French students go into the first grade at the beginning of that first year, they've left kindergarten, they're going into first grade, there is no gender gap with regard to math.
They have an equal ability.
Correct.
To add, 2 plus 2?
They're probably starting with almost nothing. I don't know what they do in French kindergartens.
Yeah.
Here in Germany, the kindergartens do not put an emphasis on...
Oh, I see. With regard to how much education they've been given.
Right.
Not what they can do, what they've been given.
They have the same baseline, effectively. And they looked at more than 2.5 million kids. So, very much the same baseline. And that by the end of that year, there is a gender gap showing that boys are better, have better math scores than girls do.
When they graduate first grade.
Yeah, if you want to call it graduation.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to call it right now. They graduate first grade, the boys can do it better than the girls.
Right. And they took a look at this at various stages throughout first grade. They were looking, I think parsed the data to try to figure out, does it matter when you were born? Because, of course, you can be an old first grader or a young first grader. No, there are enough people in the study. This appears to be true. And that's all they're pointing out. They're not trying to say anything more than that. They don't speculate, so I'm not going to speculate either.
Mm-hmm.
They end by saying these findings point to the first year of school as the time and place where a math gender gap emerges in favor of boys, thus helping focus the search for solutions and interventions. We don't know why it's happening. Is this nature? Is this nurture? We don't know.
We just know that it's happening.
Here is where it appears to begin, and hence we can start focusing on that year as the place to perhaps redress it or to improve these outcomes.
Okay.
Again, rapid emergence of a maths gender gap in first grade.
Before we go, one last study. Intrasexual envy, jealousy, and competitiveness are associated with height and height dissatisfaction. This is just another one. Like you just mentioned, it is what it is. If you are short, or actually, to be absolutely correct here, or precise, if you want to be taller, you feel intrasexual envy, jealousy, and competitiveness more than if you don't want to be taller than you are.
It doesn't matter how tall I am.
It doesn't matter as much.
Okay.
Okay? There were two questions asked. Are you satisfied with your height? And do you want to be taller? That's interesting that there's a difference between those two questions, because I would assume if you're not satisfied with your height that you want to be taller. But anyways, if you answer yes to the question, do you want to be taller, you are more competitive, you are more envious, and you are more jealous than the members of your own sex, i.e.
Sorry, I have to interrupt. Yeah. I've jumped to assuming this is about men. Is it about men?
63% of the participants were men. They're looking at 302 people. 63% were men, average age 37. It seems that men are way more jealous, competitive, and to a lesser extent, envious of other members of their sex, i.e. other men, if they are short, i.e. want to be taller. That is just what this study found out. That's it. There it is.
You mentioned this to me, just the headline. I didn't know any of the details, but you mentioned the headline. I went looking for some sort of anecdotal comments across the internet. I'll get to those in just a second. But one thing I said right when you mentioned it is there's a reason, I think, that people are talking about this now.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of, I think, 7,000 studies are published every day.
Yeah.
This one's getting attention. Why?
It'd be good to know why.
I believe this is strongly connected to what has become a theme or a meme or a trend online where men feel aggrieved. Some men feel aggrieved because in social, in dating apps like Tinder, I'm just going to name one, or Bumble or any of the dating apps, sometimes some people say, I'm only willing to date a man over this height. I think often the height is 6 foot.
Oh, man.
1.8 meters, roughly.
Okay.
And anyone under that threshold is automatically out of bounds. I'm not even going to begin talking to you, which is just...
And this is women saying it about men, not men saying it about women. There's no, you have to be at least this tall when it comes to men talking about women.
The discussion online is that. Now, of course, these are dating apps. It happens all sorts of which ways. I think there could be men saying equally nasty, is that too judgmental, but equally delineating who or whom they're going to date based on other things that probably women would find completely offensive and unchangeable.
I'm just saying it would absolutely explain why these men are becoming more competitive, more jealous, and more envious if it's that black and white.
Sometimes.
I won't even look at your picture. There's no chance you're getting swiped.
And to be totally fair here, all you need is one out of 1,000 people doing this, and somebody screenshots that person's criteria.
And it gets blown out of proportion. Like, oh, everyone's doing this now.
Look, they're all like that. Yeah. No. Most people are pretty relaxed and rational, and they're interested in you, the person. I think that's got to be a fact for most of humanity. A minority does have that preference and is stating it now, because before I'm not sure you could have really stated that before in the same way. Now you can. And it's one of the criteria. So
you've printed out some comments.
Sorry,
are these people who are angry about this phenomenon?
Yeah. So part of the reason I know these things is because once in a while there'll be kind of an open question on the internet. Hey, you know, shorter guys, how are you dealing with this? How are you doing? Okay. Like this is probably hard for you. And I just pulled arbitrarily from lists of answers from the anonymous social media site Reddit of people who appear very much so to be consider themselves short or to be under, I think, the threshold of 5'9" is usually the one that's mentioned. How do you feel about this? Here's one guy saying, honestly, the majority of people who have shamed me for my height are men, and it does make me mad a little, but the fact that they're shaming people on their height tells me they have a lot more insecurities than I do. Also, I am taller than most women I know, so I don't feel that short. It also helps that I'm handsome. And a lot of celebrities that are known for being handsome are the same height as me.
Nice.
Nice way of dealing with it. It just means, here's another comment, that when I swiped on Tinder and saw a minimum height requirement of 6 foot, I knew they were a bad person. And so I swiped away.
Oh, there you go. That's all. These are really positive spins on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Another guy, I'm 5'9". My wife's 5'7". I'm below average height, but it doesn't stop me from being happy.
Yeah.
Another person saying, in probably eighth grade, I just stopped caring about people's opinions in general. This probably wasn't the healthiest strategy because I believe it led to the surfacing of sociopathic tendencies as I stopped caring about other people. in general.
At all, yeah. Their feelings and everything.
But it helped me be happier in every way possible. It's me for me, not someone else.
I don't know if I want to give that advice to our listeners, but yeah, that's one way to get through it, one way to cope.
Yeah.
Just who cares about what you say and who cares about you at all?
Yeah. I saw another person, I guess I didn't print that one, but another comment saying, look, it feels like everything's a luxury to me, from a hotel bed to an airplane seat to a motorcycle.
Because everything's so big?
Not comfortable. Not ridiculous, just comfortable. I mean, it's something I said this before. I do think about this because my wife's father is, I would guess, about 5'8", 5'9". Huh. And so I look at my son and wonder, my son who adores the sport of volleyball. It's the only thing he cares about. And that is a sport where height matters. Mm-hmm. And so I think about this and think, I hope for that reason alone. But he may end up being.
So you're waiting for him to go through his growth spurt? And if he doesn't, you're not going to be sad, are you?
No, I guess what I'm saying is I'm sensitive to this discussion. It's ugly. I think it's terrible that, and I love the trend of some guys on social media calling themselves short kings. Yeah. Take it, own it, love it. Yeah, like these comments. It doesn't really matter at all.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter at all.
I just hope my daughter's feet don't become gigantic. She's already got size 41 in European sizes. What is that? 8 in American sizes?
Well, that's usually before the rest of the body grows, right?
I just hope she doesn't have clown shoes.
Great for swimming. It's
She's
that time of the year.
She's getting braces today, too. So. Oh,
congratulations. That time of life
Anyways.
Was painful for me. In any case, any questions, any comments, any thoughts on the... I was going to say billions, quadrillions probably of worms under our feet, these transparent little animals that form towers. Nematodes.
Nematodes.
Nematodes. I wish the word toad wasn't in there because it confuses my English-speaking brain.
Should social media be banned for young people? That's apparently a question, something that might happen all across France. And
do you have a theory, because it can only be a theory, on the gender gap that becomes apparent, at least in French students, between the beginning of first grade and the end of first grade? What is causing that? Let us know. SU@dw.com. I don't know what I'm waiting for, but love's gonna come my way. Science Unscripted. Oh, 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 it's gonna come my way. Oh, 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 it's gonna come my way. I don't know what I'm waiting for, but love's gonna come my way. I don't know what I'm waiting for, but love's gonna come my way. Oh, 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 it's gonna come my way. Oh, 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 it's gonna come my way. I see the hope in the sunlight. I see the lines in the sea. I know the future is just you and me. I don't know what I'm waiting for, but love's gonna come my way. Come my way. I don't know what I'm waiting for, but love's gonna come my way. Oh, it's gonna come my way. Love's gonna come my way tonight.
DW, made for minds.
Love's gonna come my way tonight.